Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. Boy, we have a wonderful guest today that just ties everything together because we love our audience and we like to bring them things, information about their personal terrain. And you're an advocate, so am I, but you're more of an advocate for the environmental terrain. So we have a guest, Carolyn Blazowski, and she's going to tie those together. How you can, I don't know how to tie it together. How your environment affects your personal terrain. So I think that is wonderful. We are not simultaneously broadcasting. We do that on our Tuesday show. You can hear us with Richard over on Blog Talk Radio, and that will be up shortly after the show, but we'll also keep it up for about 3 weeks on our site, thesoundhealthoptions.com. We're being brought to you by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, and the particular software that we're bringing to you this week is Biohazard. So looking at some of these external things like chemtrails and how that affects the body, but we'll ask our guests about that and lots of other wonderful things as soon as we do a couple of announcements. I don't know who won the neuroplasticity software from last Tuesday. We'll try to announce that. But you could call the office and see, and that'll be sent right out to whoever won it so that they can make a choice of having the PC version, or they can go onto our portal where we offer people vocal analysis every day if they want it. It's free. And they can look at their nutritional needs and their muscular needs if they come into that soundhealthportal.com as a guest. So that was pretty long-winded, Richard.
I will once again... Oh, go ahead, Sherry.
I was going to say, I think our guest is going to be able to take questions for those of you in chat. You can put those questions in and we'll try to include them.
Absolutely. I want to remind everybody that from Blog Talk Radio that about 10 to 15 minutes after we end the show, you'll be able to go back to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archive Player tab. And the player will pop up, and the last five shows that we've done will be there. And I'm betting this show will be there about 10 to 15 minutes afterwards. And or I suggest that everybody and advocate for people going to blogduckradio.com, signing up for a free account. They don't spam you. They don't do anything dumb. Well, I can't completely say that. In my opinion, they don't do anything dumb. And that way you'll be able to you can then search for Sherry Edwards, follow that show, follow this show, follow the other shows we do on Tuesday. You'll have ready access to the over now, I'm shocked to say, over 500 shows that are available. And you can also find those by going to iTunes or your podcast aggregator app of your choice and search for Sherry Edwards, and the shows will be available there as well. And this is going to be one of those shows I already know from reading and listening and knowing some of this, being aware and a cranky environmentalist for decades, that this is going to be a show you're going to want to listen to because it's filled with health positive, amazing, great information. So there's that.
I would like to announce that we have another two-day free class to the public on June 8th and 9th, and this one's going to be about the nutrients that your brain needs from you. And then we're going to be doing a class in July about arthritis, mostly for professionals, so that they can have a voice analysis done in their office, and we can tell them, bioacoustically speaking, why people might have arthritis. So we have over 100 softwares that we make available to the people on our workstation So if you're interested in learning how to use that workstation or just to get the software, because the software is going to be free with the course, go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com, and look under classes. We bring that to you as a public service. So while you're there, there's also profiles. We just did a profile on Bill Cosby and some of the reasons for his behavior. We have Kirstie Alley up there and about how she accidentally turned on her hibernation gene. That's an interesting story. And also the reasons, bioacoustic reasons, we think, for Kim Kardashian's big butt. There is something sweeping the nation, or really the world, because we've heard from people all around the world about lipodemia, which is the fat gets into the cell, but it can't get back out, and it's making some people's lives very miserable. So we're going to have a guest on down the road in June about the paleo diet and how they're trying to undo that. In most cases, since the election, Richard and I try to stay away from political things, but we each have our own soapbox, so we each have some information that we want to share with you. One tiny one, somebody sent me an article. Actually, a lot of you have been writing this week about what's going on in the government, and I'm just going to say, we're going to stay away from that one for the moment. But there's an old herb they found, and Richard, maybe you know about this since you're a wonderful herbalist. Sumarin, S-U-M-A-R-I-N.
Huh.
And they're claiming that it's reversing ADD, which is incredible as far as I'm concerned, because I see that as becoming an international issue. I know you have an announcement. Do you want me to
go? I do. I'm gonna skip along the water like a rock over politics. This has to do with environment. This has to do with, really, as far as I'm concerned, directly related to our guest, because it's about pollution in the environment. And this is coming from the city of Pittsburgh, where I'll just read this first part. Residents in Pittsburgh say it's ironic that President Donald Trump name-dropped their city during his announcement on Thursday that the United States is pulling out of global climate accord. After all, it's stricter environmental regulations and clean energy policies that transformed their once smoky city into a beautiful place to live. I'm appalled that the president used my city to justify his unacceptable decision, as most other Pittsburghers are. Mayor Bill Peduto said in a statement, "My city has finally bounced back from decades of industrial carnage. We will do all we can to promote its own environmental standards." And then a representative from the steel industry, since Pittsburgh used to be a huge steel town, and there's some frightening photographs in this article, I'll post it in chat, showing what Pittsburgh used to look like, because nobody thought about pollution when the steel industry started at all, and it was a horrifically polluted city. Barriff, the director of Rivers of Steel National Heritage Area, echoed Gould's sentiment. He said the president's decision allows other countries to advance their energy industries while the U.S. stands still. So we're just talking about an amazing amount of pollution. You know, he's just pulled the plug on, you know, we don't care about environment. Really, that's my opinion. But I mean, that adds to, you know, the pollution in the air, which adds to all sorts of potential infractions on our immune system. So it's just, it really is appalling. Did you want to talk about that Swedish ban?
Yes, that's it. I was just thinking, you're doing your environmental thing, and definitely Sandusky, Ohio, and Pittsburgh, and a lot of these places need cleaned up. But our mail this week has been running wild with Trump's climate back out, or whatever you want to call it. And people are really split over this. And you've given good reasons, but we're just not going to go into it any more than what Richard has provided to you. A lot of you brought up the water issue in Flint, too. I think there's a lot of things that need more study. And one of them is the vaccinations. And my announcement is about Sweden bans mandatory vaccinations over serious health concerns. And I wish that America would do that, or any other country, because I really think there needs to be more study. We have a computer program called PreVac, and we've done over 300 kids with this. And the kids that ended up being damaged were the ones that didn't have the ability to turn the vaccine into something useful, and that's usually connected to quercetin. So if you have a group in your city and you want to know more about this, and we're also doing a campaign like that on PTSD, get in touch with us, and we'll help you do some scanning. I'm writing articles about trying to get some pre-information done that is valid, and one studies that don't line the pockets of the people who are selling what they're trying to defend. So that's enough for my soapbox this morning. Richard, I'll turn it back over to you to introduce our guest.
I'm excited. This is going to be a fun conversation. I put fun in air quotes. Caroline Blazovsky is a national healthy home expert with over 16 years of experience working the public and physicians to create healthy living spaces and improve wellness. Her certifications and education include knowledge of mold, indoor air quality, chemicals in the home, green building, healthy homes, and allergies. Caroline was featured in ARP this year as a leading health and safety expert. She's a public educator in the media, radio, television, and print. She's also president of My Healthy Home, a green company that offers testing services, products, and consultations for homes throughout the United States. Welcome, Caroline.
Well, hello, guys. Thank you for having me.
Excuse the rant.
I love it. I love it.
I'm an old, I guess I'm an old hippie in a certain sense. You know, I've really cared about the environment forever, since I was in high school. And I think it's just really, and it leads right into what you're talking about in terms of, my question for you is kind of a two-parter. How did you get here? And did you hold a vision of becoming America's healthy home expert?
That's a good question. It's been a long process as to how I got here. I think there were many influencing factors that evolved into it. I think that as I progressed through the years, you know, things and your goals sort of change, and then you mold to fit those goals. But I did have allergies when I first started, and this is going back 20 years ago. And I felt there was a need, and there wasn't really a lot of explanation for why people developed allergies. And then it developed into understanding that homes contributed a lot to how we feel. And then an understanding of that public health tells us that 90% of what we do really has nothing to do with healthcare. How you feel, how well you're going to be, is really determined by things like environment, behavior, genetics, socioeconomic status, and 10% is what you do with healthcare. So that created an even bigger portion of why I started focusing more and more and more on the environment, and then it just grew into, you know, what it is today. But I really believe strongly that our environments play a huge part in how we feel, our wellness, and if you make the changes that we recommend and become more conscious about your environment, you're going to live a healthier lifestyle than someone who doesn't.
And how did you become focused on the home? I mean, it makes sense in my mind, so that's why I'm sort of halting, you know, hesitating as I ask the question. But why did you become focused on your living environment versus the possibility of becoming a doctor or a practitioner who would aid healthcare? You became really, and I mean this in the best of ways, obsessed about healthy homes.
Right, correct. And it's interesting because when I first started in this industry, and I started doing mold investigations and indoor air quality investigations, a lot of people came to me and said, you're never going to make any money doing residential. Why do you want to do residential? Do commercial. And I had no interest. I really always just felt that your home is, you spend most of your time there, you sleep there. It just made sense to me. I wish I could give you an answer, Richard, and say it was this or that, but I just had this strong focus on a correlation between that your home really dictated how you felt. And I guess I saw enough examples of people who were living in bad environments and then the health implications that came with it. And then when you saw people who were healthier living into their later years and, you know, had good quality of life, they lived in environments that were better. So I think that sort of just stuck with me all these years. And I have been like this since day one. And I wish I could tell you specifically why, but I really do have a love for home and how it impacts us. So.
Well, it makes so much sense, particularly as you, I know you work with practitioners who send you people, or maybe I believe you consult with them as well. Mm-hmm. But that's always a part that I had an herb store and a national mail order catalog in the 80s. It actually started in the 70s, but I don't like to go back that far. And it always, there was at some point, it fell into my mind. I'd had exposure to Deborah Lynn Dadd's book, Non-Toxic and Natural.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the very first books. And it really began to introduce the idea of when I was dealing with people who would come in, clients who would come in that I was working with making, you know, formulas or suggested, you know, protocols, that, you know, you'd give it to one person and they'd get better, and you'd give it to another person and they wouldn't get better. And there was the consideration, the context of who they were and all their conditions. But then there was that, I think it was Deborah Lynn Dadd's book for me that was the aha of like, wait a minute, you're at home, you sleep, for that's like where you are the most.
Mm-hmm.
And how dealing with doctors, even alternative practitioners, that was not very much of a focus. And I had that same like possessed about indoor air quality. Oh my God. You know, so let's jump right into talking about indoor air quality and what it can do for you. I'm trying to
and
put
I
a
think
hop
too,
in.
Just a Go preference ahead. Too. Like when we talk about indoor air quality, people think just solely air, right? So when I look at a home, I really want to look at all the pieces of a home that can contribute to impacting our wellness. And when you are a homeowner or you live somewhere, a house has multiple factors. I mean, they're endless, and we're learning more and more as we go. You know, we knew volatile organics were bad at one point, and we know formaldehyde is bad, and then now we're starting to learn about POPs and persistent pollutants that are not volatile organics but are semi-volatile. So all of these things that we expose ourselves into our homes, from the water to the walls to whatever, that's what we're looking at. So I just preface that by saying it's not just indoor air quality, but it's other factors too in the house that contribute.
And the part of the thing with it that you've talked about, I read a bunch of your information, listened to a number of shows, is that when you're talking about indoor air quality, people think, oh, air, you know, having to do with like things coming in from outside. But you really get into the importance of, you know, mold and mildew and VOCs and POPs and all sorts of, you know, spooky acronyms.
Yeah.
Which affect indoor air quality, and that's why it's so incredibly important. So when you go into a home, is that the first thing you test is air quality, because that can tell you so much about what's actually going on in the home?
It's so much more intricate than one thing, right? So usually when a doctor sends someone to me or a patient comes and they express an interest in creating a better environment, and it may be because they have health effects or it may be because they just want to be healthier, or their doctor sends them, whichever way they come to us is great. So when we're looking at, we do a quick assessment, and it's always a free assessment. It's not something that costs money, but we kind of want to get an idea of what the symptoms are, what the reason is, where they are, and then there's certain panels and protocol that I'll follow that I go in different directions depending on what the patient tells me. So let's just say you came to me and you said, you know, I'm having chronic congestion a lot. I'm getting sinus infections. I notice, you know, I get colds, but they linger. They stay. I get pneumonia. Those typical symptoms will trigger me to say, okay, we're really going to start looking at mold here. Not that always everybody fits into the same category, but we know molds have this ability that they can suppress immune system. The colds stay longer, especially if you tell me you're living in a climate where you are more susceptible to temperature changes, right? So if something's cold, the foundation stays cold, then we get hot temperatures with that influx. I know you're condensating a lot. Issues out in Arizona are different, or parts of California are different than the Northeast or Florida or California or Las Vegas. So where you live in your climate takes into consideration, a big part of my consideration of how I'm going to advance your protocol.
So when somebody, because you work nationwide, is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
So when somebody calls you from, I don't know why this comes to mind, Malibu.
Right.
I don't know why I picked Malibu. It just
That's
happened.
A good one.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Pepperdine. I'd love to consult there. So when somebody calls you from Malibu, which is right on the coast of California, mm-hmm. it's cold and damp in the evenings. It can be sunny and warm in the daytime because the fog does tend to blow off. So you have that drastic swing of exactly what you're talking about, where you have it's warm in the day. So at night, the buildings are sucking in that cool air.
Mm-hmm.
And what can that lead to? I mean, that's a tricky dance environmentally.
Well, the thing too is you want to know how is their house built, right? Are they, a lot of times in California, you're built on crawl spaces. So, or on slabs. So you want to know, you know, how the building's constructed, the building envelope, you know, what are the problems that I may experience there that I'm not experiencing, say, in the Northeast. When I went back, when I started investigating environmental things, I started originally with mold and indoor air quality issues. But then I went back to university to learn about building envelope and construction and actual architecture, because without it, you can't really understand how a house operates or why it's performing the way it is if you don't have that education. So that was very, very, very useful. And I think sort of gave me a very unique understanding of how these work. So when you're dealing with California, if you're on a slab or you have cold condensation happening on a concrete slab, and then you've got air quality coming in that's very warm, you will condensate. Water can be in air or, you know, a liquid, a gas, or a solid. So when you condensate on cold block with hot air temperature, I know that there's a moisture issue, which can potentially lead to mold. So certain subsets of the country will have, you know, more risk of getting those issues. So yes, where, how the house is built, where it's built, if it could potentially have mold issues, all play into sort of sending me on a protocol or a pathway to figuring out what could potentially be your problem.
Well, and somewhere I have a note here. I don't remember if I heard you say this or if I read this. You talk about what I would call an amazing little trick using a humidity monitor, an inexpensive
right.
device where you're looking for, you know, this seems like it could be life-changing in a very positive way. I mean, it's such a dumb little device. Please talk about that. I was really like, wow, what a great idea.
No. So, I mean, the biggest hint and the biggest, tip that I can give to homeowners is, look, you go to Home Depot or, you know, any hardware store, Lowe's, whatever you want, pick up a little hygrometer. It's going to tell you temperature. Don't spend a lot, you know, $20 max. Like, this is not a big investment. Temperature and relative humidity. And you want to try to keep your temperature consistent. I usually say about 72 degrees. You don't want to go too high. The higher you can keep it, the better to keep dust mites and molds and things down, because what people don't understand is temperature is directly linked to relative humidity. If I raise temperature in a space and it's simply raising the temperature higher, I'm going to drop relative humidity. It's a known fact. But what happens is if you raise temperature too high, you become uncomfortable, you don't feel well, you're hot, you're irritable, whatever. So you want to try to keep your temperature in your home as high as you can without feeling uncomfortable or having guests feel uncomfortable. And then you want to monitor your relative humidity, and you want to look at this relative humidity monitor and try to stay within 30 to 50% in your home. If you do this, and you can go a little bit above or a little bit below, and you will in the winter go below, you want to keep that relative humidity low. And the reason you do this is not only does it help deter mold, because all of these things feed on moisture. They're just like people. They need air and food and water to breathe and to survive. So when we cut back the water supply, you cut back the potential of having toxic things or things that can contaminate your home survive. So what does that mean? Mold. Molds don't like surviving in drier climates. So they will be less and proliferate less in your home if you keep your relative humidity lower. Dust mites are the same thing. They will also proliferate less, become less, cause less allergens, lay less eggs, create less proteins that all contribute to allergens. Similarly, bugs. Bugs need water to survive. When you see things like termite infestation or you see black ant infestation, these animals and insects come because of water. And it's always, people say, well, I see black ants, you know, when they start spraying pesticide. And I just cringe. I say, look, you don't need to do this. You're spraying neurotoxins and things and carcinogens that are potentially going to impact your immune system and your health. These animals are coming, and insects, excuse me, because of the fact that they need water and food. You're providing it. And when you go to look at, you know, a carpenter ant infestation, you'll see that there's water there. You'll see there's damp wood, and you'll see they're feeding on it. So you need to fix the solution, the problems that are creating these situations, and not just complicate it by spraying an insecticide or fungicide or, you know, biocide in your home to prevent them from coming. Fix the structural issues, and you won't have the issue. So relative humidity plays into that. Keeping moisture low in your home will automatically improve these other things, and it's very simple to do.
And it jumps out at me that you just use one of my favorite words, neurotoxin, that one of the things you don't want to do is call the pest control company.
Exactly.
Because A, for what you're saying, they're not really taking care of the problem. They're just taking care of a manifestation of the problem. And they're adding a neurotoxin to your environment.
Yeah.
Ew, bad.
And these things impact, you know, our children.
Sure.
You know, there's lots of other things inside of pesticide that are carcinogenic, petroleum-based. They linger for very long periods of time. You know, certain things, like especially when you're looking at aldrin and chlorodane and DDT and these older chemicals that were used, these lifespans were 15 years. They were what we call POPs. And for people who don't understand POPs, it's sort of like it's a persistent organic pollutant. It's something that stays around for a very long time. It's able to get into our you know, endocrine systems and disrupt things to a very high level. And it basically causes, you know, adverse effects on humans and the ecosystem. So these things stay around for a long time. They're not exposed to air and sun and things that can degrade them. And you're exposed to them for periods of time much longer than just when you applied them. So because of it, and because pesticides do this, these aren't things that you want to just arbitrarily do every quarter in your home. You know, people get on pesticide plans and they're like, well, they come every quarter, they just spray, I really don't have a problem, they're just coming. I mean, this is just a marketing gimmick that's been sold to homeowners, and my concern is to let them know that, one, if you do have a problem, you've got to find out why the problem exists to begin with and solve it from a proactive standpoint. But two, these aren't things you just do at whim and just engage in your home because they have potentially very dangerous side effects.
Yes. really, it's amazing when I visit people's homes and I see, yeah, they just, you know, particularly I went back to Florida once and I was visiting friends and they were, you know, we're all sitting inside talking and there's a guy outside, happens to be a guy, in a hard hat, wearing a vest with a company name we would all know, just spraying like, oh, it's that's just, you know, they come exactly what you said every, you know, quarter and they just do this. And I'm like, really? This is a thing? I'm from California. I didn't know.
And homeowners just think that they're supposed to do their annual spraying for fertilizer, pesticide. Like, it's just, it's become part of our American culture, right? You own a home, you've got to have a green lawn. This is how you go about it. And I'm here to say, look, this is not how you go about it. You can do this in a not only natural way, but something that's proactive for the environment. But also, this is a selfish thing. This is to protect you. And I find that, you know, you can preach about green and you can preach about the environment, but ultimately what makes people motivated is what's going to be best for their family and them. And then secondary, okay, well, I'll help the planet. I mean, I hate to say it, there are exceptions to the rule, and there's a lot of us who care just in general, but you know, a lot of people are really concerned about why this is this going to benefit me? Why should I do this for my family? It's my dollar. It's my expense. Why should I not or do something? And, you know, my concern is, look, when you're spraying these things, they don't just dissipate. They're not a fly-by-night, oh, I'm spraying, and then it's gone. These things affect you for long durations of time, and they're not necessary. You don't need the exposure. You have other things you need to be exposed to in the world, going out, working, doing the things you have to do. So to keep you healthy, let's try to minimize what exposures you really truly need to be around and what you don't.
Well, and the idea, I will get off this, but and the idea of, so you have the pest person come and do the thing, and then you have kids. Let's just say you have kids or pets. And you know, both of them take their paws, whether it be children or kids or dogs or cats, go outside and walk around in that.
Absolutely.
So you've got that exposure. And then they come back in and walk on your carpet.
That's right.
Ew. I don't have a better word. I need a better word than ooh. I need like a bad sound effect. But I mean, it's just amazing how that can add up. And like you say, the world is already toxic enough.
Mm-hmm. And we're not expecting you to live in a bubble. I don't ever come and say to my clients, look, I don't expect you to not live life. I want everybody to live life. But you have to, it's just like being a selective consumer. You have to look at what's presented to you and make choices that you say, okay, I'm going to do this, and I know the impact of it, and I'm willing to have my exposure to that, but I don't want this. It's a balancing act, and you need to balance in a world today where everything's being thrown at you that has a lot of toxic effects. You need to pick and choose what you're going to be exposed to. And I can tell you definitively from doing this 20 years, I have developed a term called the trifecta effect. And why I mention that is because when I see homes where people are exposed to three things or more, and this could be, there's lots of things we could talk about, molds, toxic molds, proteins, chemicals, volatile organics, pesticides. When I start to see three, and three big ones where you have a subsequent exposure and that level staying high and you're in that environment, I see people who don't feel well. And they can be, you know, from immune problems to cancer. And it's become very consistent now that I see this. So what I'm trying to say is if you balance and you reduce things and you have certain exposures, but not a lot of them, you're going to be a healthier person than someone who doesn't.
And can we back up for just a moment? You talked about mold and then you used the term hazardous or health hazardous mold. Could you differentiate those out ever so slightly?
Well, mold, there's thousands of types of mold, and there's different types of mold that go with it, and they have different abilities. Molds do three things, and I like to sort of break it down into easy science. So molds have that fuzzy thing that you see growing on a piece of fruit or on your shower. Looks like a spore. People look at it and say, ew, gross, you know, my fruit's turned blue or green or white or whatever. So that spore contains what we call a protein, or it's sort of like a protein. It's actually a sugar. It's like a polysaccharide sugar called a beta-glucan. A percentage of the population, 18% of the population or so, is allergic to that protein. So if you had mold in your house and it has this protein in it, chances are you will have allergies if you have susceptibility to it. But then molds also do something else. When they're there, they're just like humans, right? They eat, they breathe, and they live. And when they do this, they put out a gas. So they're breathing in and out, they're hanging out in your house, and I call it like your molds are smoking cigarettes. And they're putting off a VOC. So now you got a mold that's producing a protein that you could be allergic to, but now it's smoking cigarettes in your environment. So now you don't like that. It's hanging out. You've supplied it the right environment. It has dampness. It has sheetrock in your basement. It's got some chocolate cake. Now it's going to hang out, right? So it smokes cigarettes. Gas is coming out. Thirdly, certain molds produce what we call a mycotoxin. This mycotoxin, obviously, as you know, can do all such sorts of crazy things from being immunosuppressive to affecting your neurologic system. This mycotoxin, molds are very competitive. They're like us, right? So they're like, I want to fight for this position in life. I want to do this. It's amazing, like even on such a small microbiological level, like the goals are the same, right? So when they start to feel threatened or you have a lot of different species of molds living in your house, so say you've got a lot of water damage in these, you've got, you know, Penicillium, Aspergillus, you have Chytomium, Stachybotrys, all these molds in there, they start to become territorial and fight for life. And when they do, they produce more mycotoxins, and they do it normally. So when they feel threatened or if you clean them up and you don't really clean them up well, more mycotoxins will come out. So they do these things, and this is what makes them so bad in our environments. And that's why, like, outside, they're fantastic. They break down organic material. They break down wood. We love them. They're an essential part to, you know, our human ecology or our ecology. But when they are inside, they create a problem and they can make you very, very sick on many levels. And that's why you don't want them in the house.
And what can we do? Well, let's say you're a renter instead of a homeowner. What can we do to have a positive effect on our indoor air quality? We've got this amazing trick with measuring your humidity, which tells you quite, you know, tells you that whether you have a potential issue, I mean, there's an issue at any point, but I mean, that is such a wonderful little like tip.
Perfect for these renters because, look, if you've got an apartment that's got toxic mold, first, you should always be testing. Everybody needs to test every 3 to 5 years. This has been my protocol for, you know, the last 15 years. So every homeowner should be testing. If you buy a property, you test before you buy it, and you should subsequently stay on top of that every 3 to 5 years, just like you do radon or water testing, no different. That's going to tell you, are there areas of the home that are potentially causing a problem that you can't see? You do this with an air sample. You can pull, you know, multiple air samples in the house. You pull an outside sample as your baseline, and you compare what's going on. And it shows you progression. Like, I've done it in my, I do it in my house. I just did one, I don't know, probably 6 months ago, not even. And I can see the basement starting to have a little problem. You'll see these elevations, and you'll see where potentially you're starting to have, you know, a problem. And then you can put it on your bucket list, like, okay, I'm going to have to do the kitchen at some point, have to do a bathroom. These things, kitchens, bathrooms, don't have, they have a lifespan. They're not, it's you do a kitchen or you do a bathroom and you don't ever have to touch it again. Remodeling is a part of being a homeowner. So you have to, every 20 years or so, that's just my little threshold, you've got to redo bathrooms because they're water sources that have been brought in. They will get moldy. You get plywood underneath, sweating that occurs from your toilets, from your showers, you know, condensation from hot water, cold water, air temperatures. It's just going to happen. You're going to have water issues in these areas. So you need to stay on top of redoing them periodically to make sure you don't get substantial mold problems behind the walls in places that you can't see. So we're all susceptible to this, and that's why it's important to test to really know what's going on a continuum basis so you don't get into a problem where you do have tons of toxic mold or, you know, major water infiltration problems and the whole house is moldy and, you know, it's maintenance.
I have a question from chat regarding mold. Let's say that you, is there a difference in terms of testing? A, is there a difference in testing? And B, is there a difference between like bathroom mold and outdoor mold? Are these different creatures or mold is really mold, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there are what we call indoor molds, what we call water damage indicators or molds that come when you have water intrusion inside the home. And they specifically sort of happen because of the products we use and the environments that they are able to grow in. But molds exist, you know, indoors and outdoors similarly. And if they get the right environments indoors, they'll start to grow there. Her other question is, yes, testing is different. We have different methods for testing mold. The mold test that I'm talking to you about is what we call standard air sampling testing. But there are other ways to test. We can test for VOCs. As I talked about, those molds produce gas, right, like smoking cigarettes. We now have the ability, my company is one of the few in the country that tests for volatile organics that come off of mold. And this is helpful, right? So if you have mold in a wall and you can't get to it and it's not flying around on an air sample and your air sample comes back clean, we can check to see if those gases are in the air. So we can sort of, we're tricking the mold, right? You know, we know it's not growing inside the environment, but we're looking for the gas that it's producing. Typically, tests add up, so when you do an air sample, if someone has a significant problem with mold, it's going to show up on the first test. But it's always a way of double-checking to make sure that it's not within the walls or somewhere you can't see. And then now you can do mycotoxin testing, too, which is available, which measures, you know, once the mold is cleaned up, have those mycotoxins infiltrated the house, and, you know, they're very, very little. They're smaller than the size of a micron. So these little things that the molds produce get out through your ductwork, they get out into your wallboards, they get out into your flooring after you have a mold problem, and these stay behind and make people sick. And people say, well, I had a mold problem, but I cleaned it up. Why am I still not feeling well? So one, it could be something else. It may not be mold. But two, it could be these little mycotoxins that have gotten into the environment. So those are other things you can test for down too.
We here in Ohio have a really wet environment. A lot of people have wooden shingles. Since that's an outside thing, would you take a scraping and test it, or would it still be air?
Okay, well, if you have, and you're talking about exterior on the house, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I like wood shingles, okay, for a couple reasons, because they are able to breathe. A lot of the products that we use now currently for building don't take on moisture well, and then when they release it back into the environment, they don't dry out well. So I am a big proponent of wood, actually, exterior-wise. If you're seeing mold or moss growing on a substance, okay, on your house, usually if you look at the north side of the house, you'll see more because the sun doesn't hit it. So always when I'm looking at a house, like on an investigation or something, I'm going to look at the north side because I want, that's going to be the worst case scenario. If you start to see substantial mold, there's usually a building envelope problem. So either mold is getting down within and behind your shingle and being able to infiltrate that plywood, that moisture is staying there. It's not drying out. And usually it comes to be structural issues. You shouldn't see mold growing all over your house. You shouldn't see moss or green, you know, the green fuzzy stuff growing all over. When you do, there's a moisture source that's staying there that's not being removed or able to dry out. And typically it becomes a flashing issue or a water intrusion issue. Something's going on with the building envelope. So it's real important when you see that in your home, and I'm talking not little, you know, little specks of it just happening, you know, here and there. I'm talking about concentrated areas. Get that checked out. Bring in a carpenter, bring in someone, a contractor, and have them evaluate what's really going on.
I'm going to go back for a minute, back to our indoor air quality. What about, I think it's a good time to talk about HEPA filters. Mm-hmm. They seem to be a real positive ally, particularly, again, I'm back to talking renters. We're not going to remodel our bathrooms, and more than likely, the landlord isn't going to care unless there's an actual problem that they need to correct. Mm-hmm. So can HEPA filters give us benefit? And talk about HEPA filters, please.
I have a different philosophy on filters than when I first originally started. When I first started in the business, I was more prone to filtration. And then as I became more involved and, you know, tested more for proteins and things that people were allergic to, I found that a lot of these purifiers, what they do is they hold a protein in the filter. So if you're allergic to cat or dog or peanut or mold protein and that sits in a filter, it's still in the room with you. And the clients would still be reacting, and then once we remove the purifier, they would improve. So I think you have to be really careful about what you're capturing in filters and how they're staying there, and then what your susceptibility is. But with that being said, I am a big proponent of HEPA filtration, especially when I'm dealing with situations like particulate in New York City or Los Angeles where I can't remove sources and we've got high particulate in the air. We know that higher particulate concentrations of 2.5 microns or less really do contribute to Alzheimer's and diseases. We're starting to see a big correlation between more particulate in the air and people being chronically sick. The other thing, too, is that filtration over the age of 65 with HEPA is excellent. Cardiovascular function improves tremendously. We saw studies that have been done out of Sweden and, you know, overseas that have really shown that when we use HEPA filtration and we reduce particulate that's in the air, we're improving cardiovascular function significantly, almost an 8.1% improvement in individual MVF. So what that means is, look, if you're older and you're starting to age and we don't process things as well, I mean, that's part of getting older. As we age, these things affect us more. You want to start using HEPA filtration. It'll be significantly beneficial to your cardiovascular system if you do, especially, you know, over the age of 65.
Well, I have HEPA filters in each room that I spend the most time in, which is my bedroom and where I'm standing now. Okay. As sort of a habit lifestyle. And I'm in that ballpark. I'm in that age range. And
well, good.
I just, it, particularly in the bedroom, it always made sense to me because it's where your body is trying to rest and repair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to have the cleanest air, you know, I don't have electromagnetic pollution in my bedroom and I don't have any other, you know, my bedroom is an oasis of no electronics except for my HEPA filter. And that's pretty much it. And
yeah,
I just think that it, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I agree with you about the electromagnetic, mine too. But the thing you have to watch, and you sound like someone who would probably change your filters, but a lot of people buy a purifier and then they don't change the filters because they're expensive to change. And they're saying, oh,
right,
well, I'll just go a year. I'll go 2 years.
Yeah.
Then we start to get into a problem where we're collecting all these exposures in this filter and the concentration. I mean, you could have mycotoxins in there. You can have other things that you don't want saved in a filter. So that's where you have to be sort of, you know, it's like anything. You have to be cognizant that, especially if you have allergies, you want to change these things frequently and make sure you're using them properly if you are.
Well, it's like people who buy a water filter for their drinking water at their sink and they change it once every 5 years.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you thinking? It's just a hotbed of stuff.
Right.
So that's a whole separate show. But I mean, change your filters. Darn it.
Yeah.
That's incredibly important. And So let's talk about water quality, because I know there's water quality in terms of the potential of, you know, toxins and all that. What do you do for testing with water quality, and what are your remediations for that?
Okay, so, and that's why I'm saying when we talk about, right, we're talking about indoor air quality, when we look at a home, there's a lot of other things inside of a home that have nothing to do with indoor air. And water is one of them. And water is your biggest exposure. You shower in it every day. You're exposed to it. People say, well, I don't drink my water. I don't drink it, and therefore I'm not exposed. Believe it or not, your body has a better filtration system when you drink it. You're exposed to less pollutants when you drink your water versus showering. When something hits your skin, it 26 seconds and this is absorbed in. And this is particularly important for women to understand because we use a lot of products on our skin, on our hair, much more so than men, though men are starting to become, you know, more using more things as well. So anything you put on your body, whether it's water or, you know, perfume or lotion or shampoo or hair dye or nail polish, whatever it is, those things are absorbing into your bloodstream within 26 seconds, let's give or take. Sometimes faster, sometimes longer, but we'll just use 26 as the middle ground. So with water, when you're exposed to it, there are certain things that come right into your bloodstream. And it was interesting. I worked with a neurologist for years with clients, and we would measure, you know, we'd do heavy metal testing, you know, through the hair or the urine, and then he would say, look, this client's being exposed to this. And I'd say, well, I know where it's coming from. And he'd say, well, how do you know that? I said, because it's in their water. What was matching up on their analysis for hair and then urine was very similarly tied to the water. So if we what we saw in the water, we could match it to what was coming from the hair. And he said, well, that's amazing. So like clients would have barium exposure. And now we see, and you were talking a lot about the seeding that's going on. And we've seen a lot of influx now with water that barium is showing up a lot in the water. You know, can we say, oh, this is coming from seeding? We don't know. But we've seen an influx of things changing in our water supply that weren't there years ago. People have exposure to antimony. They have exposure, you know, to obviously, you know, you talk about lead. Lead exposure is something that, you know, we've heard a lot because of Flint. But there's a lot of other things that are there that we are exposed to in our water. So, yes, well, water is important.
Well, and particularly for not just, but particularly for those of us, I've always lived around agricultural areas. Well, I'm in California, which is a giant, people don't think of it, but it really is a huge agricultural state. You want iceberg lettuce? We grow it. I'm not proud of that. It's just a thing. And so there's just an amazing amount of, I can't use that word on air, bad things in our water here. I mean, now we're finding glyphosate.
Yeah, we test
organic,
for that now, believe it or not. We
in organic wines.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you're actually, and it's not because the organic wine growers are lying, is because there's enough in the water table that it's actually beginning to pollute.
Yeah.
So back to, you actually test for glyphosate? Is that a POP?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We test for it
that's
in the
awesome.
Water. Yeah,
wow,
we do.
Cool.
We just started doing it within the last year or so. So we do that. The other thing, too, is, I'll tell you a story about my own house, which I found interesting. When I purchased the house, the nitrates were about, I'd say about 5.6 milligrams per liter. And for people who don't know, nitrates are very, they're found in agriculture. They're found when people use a lot of pesticide fertilizer. And this brings me back to your, you know, we're talking about California and why it becomes a problem. And nitrates, when they get high, okay, and the government basically says, look, 10 parts per million, you know, anything over 10 parts per million, we'll see blue baby syndrome. That's where babies suddenly, you know, could be SIDS related to that type of line of syndrome. Prostate cancer, bladder cancer goes up. And nitrates become very prevalent in water when you use a lot of pesticide, fertilizer, all that stuff on your lawn. And what's interesting is that the World Health Organization comes out and says, no, we say 6 parts per million. So I had a house that was around 6. So it's almost like 5.6, you know, close enough to 6. So I became very concerned about the nitrates. And then when I moved in, I obviously live an organic lifestyle, so we stopped using fertilizer, pesticide. We don't store gasoline and things like that on the property. I have a well, so I'm able to sort of monitor the changes. You know, everybody, some people have city water, so it's more challenging. So we'd made these changes, and then we started to see a lot of toads appearing. These toads were jumping around, and I'm like, why are we getting toads? Like, this is crazy. I mean, big toads, like healthy, like toads. And I said, this is nuts. So toads coming, toads coming. And then I started researching toads. And what I didn't realize about toads is that they breathe through their skin. They basically, when you use pesticide or fertilizer, you basically kill them because they can't absorb it, and you cut off the way they, you know, sort of are able to get oxygen, and they are poisoned. So the toads were coming because I was increasing the environment, making it better, not using all these things. And then probably about a year later, I said, you know, I'm going to test my water. It's time. You should test your water every 3 to 5 years. And I do that. I'm vigilant about it. So I tested it. And sure enough, my nitrates had gone down from almost 6 parts per million to 3 parts per million. And I really do equate that to the fact that we really started using less of this stuff on the lawn, and we're able to impact our well and our water supply. So to me, what you do is highly, highly, highly important, and you can really make your own differences, even though people tell you you can and, you know, blah, 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 the watershed is what it is. I don't believe that. And I've seen it in my own life and, you know, with my clients. It's just not true.
That's very exciting to hear that kind of, you know, that you have a living, you have a living experience of seeing
yes.
that kind of results. It's funny.
Yeah, how do you explain it, right? You're going to say
right,
that.
Right, how do you explain it? Right. I have toads suddenly. What's that? That's awesome. That's awesome. It's funny because for me, it was in the early 80s when I went to a conference, actually up here. I was living in the Monterey Peninsula, but I came up here to a conference on water in this area, actually. And they were talking about the studies coming out of Florida about, well, the famous study was the alligators with small penises. Because it makes such a great headline,
right?
But really, what it's the opposite side of what you're talking about, where what they were talking about was estrogen mimickers in the water table,
exactly.
And like you say, the frogs, the toads, the things that live in the water are such amazing, shining examples of what's in the water. And so when people see photographs of frogs with, you know, too many legs or an extra, you know, something or, you know, mutations, they're living in that water. I mean, they're exposed 24/7, well, maybe 24, maybe 27, because they get out and walk around. But, I mean, they're in it. They're, you know, they're a permeable membrane. If we lived in the water that we have to drink every day, we might have an extra leg. I mean, it's a shocking idea, but that's very exciting to hear that you made change, and wow, you have frogs.
And the amazing thing about toads too, and I didn't know this until I started researching them, but they eat 10,000 bugs per season. So here you go, right? We're fighting this whole, we've got mosquitoes, we've got ticks, we have all these things that carry disease, but yet the simple thing that helps prevent bugs is the toad, which we've eliminated almost because of the fact we're using so much pesticide. But if you bring these back to your property, they're naturally going to eat the bugs at a very rapid rate. So, and that's just a natural solution. And then I noticed too, like more, you know, bunnies come, foxes come. Listen, if you had a lay-in pesticide, I love to tell people who spray a lot of fertilizer, well, I'm going to come spray it in your bed and have you lay down in it and see how bad your skin burns all night long. These animals
Yikes.
Are forced to lay down in these beds where, you know, they're exposed to it, and they know they come to where the environment's clean. They're not, they sense it.
Yeah.
So
I had the privilege of seeing a permacultural farmer who has greenhouses that are about an acre each. And you walk in and you see this produce growing, and it's managed completely without pesticides. And it is managed by these little, you know, lizard and frog condos, as he calls them, which is basically ponds
That's
with rocks.
Cool. That's so cool.
And they have a light in there that attracts the bugs, and the bugs come in, and some intern, we blame it on some intern at UC Santa Cruz, had to do this study where they confirm what you're saying about each frog eats like an amazing amount of bugs every night.
Yeah.
And this is how he produces produce that is like, you know, the most beautiful, you know, like centerfold produce. There's no bites. There's no, yes, a little bit of loss, but very minimal. And it's all managed by the lizards that walk around in the daytime eating things and the frogs that come out at night and eat the rest. It's an amazing thing when you actually see it in action to see that kind of thing. I have a question from chat regarding, this may be outside your vector, but I bet you have an opinion, about vaccines in terms of internal terrain and health. Do you have, in your experience, does that fall into your arena?
It doesn't really. I mean, there's been a lot of political controversy, and I don't follow it like, you know, I should. But, I mean, I'm not a big proponent of treating things unnecessarily. And, I mean, I think if something works, I wouldn't be opposed to it. You know, I think there are some benefits. I'm not ultra conservative and ultra liberal. I'm sort of somewhere in the middle. Even with pesticides and things like that, I really am for non-residential use of pesticide and fertilizers. I don't think that should be something that should be allowed in residences, but for commercial use, I'm much more lenient. There was a town in Tacoma Park, which is in Maryland. They actually recently came up with a whole protocol for reducing residential use of pesticide, which I love, and I'd really like to bring that and advocate that in New Jersey. But yeah, as far as the vaccines, it's not something that I really, you know, get involved with.
Yeah, there was an amazing thing, and then I'm surprised to find we're moving toward a close. In the city of San Francisco, when they got their, I'm not sure exactly how it got started, but they now don't use chemicals or sprays or anything in their parks in all of the city of San Francisco. They stopped using pesticides. They stopped using all of that because they realized, like we were talking earlier about, you know, paws, bare feet, people laying around on grass, so they stopped everything. And it's an amazing thing. I mean, just the idea of like, there's another way to manage it. Let's have, I think of plants like people in terms of strong immune systems. So if you have plants that have strong immune systems, they really don't need that. The bugs are typically just a manifestation indicator of like, you need to look over there. There's something
right. There. Something's wrong, right?
Something's
right.
Wrong. Something's out of balance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
We could do this for hours. Do you do consultations on the phone? How do people work with you? Where would you like people to see your information? And also talk about and tell people where they can get your Happy Healthy Home book that you were part of.
Okay. So, if they want to get information, do consults, obviously we do all the above. You go to healthyhomeexpert.com. And we have a lot of great media stuff there, just like the show will be there. And I think it's great for people to just listen and, you know, get an understanding of what we're talking about before you even do anything. Just kind of absorb the information in and see where you're going to go. They can also pick up, yes, I was part of a book and a great organization of people, the Happy Healthy Home, and you can pick that up on Amazon. You can pick it up in Barnes & Noble. That just gives you great tips and information to get you started, because this is a process. It's not something, you know, we just touched on a little bit of the iceberg of what's going on, but there's so much in a home that can go awry, and that doesn't mean you're afraid. It doesn't mean that you don't live in a bubble. It means that you're just vigilant. You go to the doctor and you get checked up. You do the same thing for your house, and it will impact your health and overall wellness, and you can use it as a resource to make you healthy. So that's what I think is the most powerful takeaway from this, is that your home is a resource to you to improve your health, and you should use it and take advantage of whatever you have to do.
Well, and as you said also during the show, there's enough toxins in the world. It doesn't seem like we have to go out of the way to add more.
Yes, exactly. It's about,
yeah, we don't,
and when you, as a woman, when you're doing something, think about your nails are toxic, your hair is toxic. Okay, well, pick one. You don't have to do everything that everybody tells you to do. Just realize it's a balancing game, and you're in charge of your health more than you realize, and you take those steps to make yourself healthy by making wiser choices.
Shocking, I say. Shocking. Wiser choices. Wow, maybe don't spray that.
Yeah.
And there is a sort of a, you know, fun, I've been on job sites with people where they you know, now I highly recommend your page on Media. There's just a load of great interviews and great information on exactly as you say. If you're going to do something, become a little educated, and then you too can annoy your contractor.
Yeah.
Because you
and
can
it's
say,
frustrating.
What is that?
I mean,
yeah.
People want to
just
go to a doctor nowadays or go to, you know, do any kind of building project and just do it, right? They're like, I don't want to think about it. And I wish I could tell people, In building, you have to investigate your products and what you're using. They're not all the same. You know, engineered lumber, pergo, things like that are not the same as using regular hardwood flooring. You're exposing yourself to much more chemicals. That doesn't mean you don't do it, but you really need to be educated about that products that you use in your home are not all equal. And your contractor is not always going to use the more expensive product because of the fact that, you know, price point is of a concern. So you need to really, you know, deal with your contractors and know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different show about building
construction. That's a whole different show. We'll have you back on that. We'll have you back and talk about that's a whole show. That's really a whole show. That's amazing. That was really great. Thank you so much for coming, Caroline. That was
I knew it was going to be a
good conversation. That was really good. And you know, the tag word for today is neurotoxin. Just remember, you know, just your organ, your largest organ on your body is your skin.
Yes.
I want everybody out there, particularly women who do like to, you know, smear stuff on, you know, remember that as you're smearing that on there. Oh, yeah. What is that that I'm smearing all over my body? And what could that do?
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. So thank you so much. That was a...
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was big fun. Sherry, any closing thoughts? Or you're over there just thinking about mold.
It was an awesome show. Richard, this is so much your bailiwick. Your questions were great.
Thank you. Alrighty, thanks again, Caroline. And everybody have a great
rest of the day. Thank you, guys. It was fantastic.
That was great. All right, everybody. We'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Bye.